Welcome to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we're taking a look at the Social Security Administration. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Reginald Wells. He's the Deputy Commissioner of the Social Security Administration's Office of Human Resources. He's also the Chief Human Capital Officer for the SSA. He oversees a staff of 400 employees and has an operating budget of about $100 million. Dr. Wells, thanks for joining me here in the studio to talk about your work for the agency. Why don't we just start with the basics? What does it mean to be the Deputy Commissioner of HR for the SSA and the CHECO for the SSA?
Sure, Sean. As Deputy Commissioner of Human Resources, I'm responsible for four major components within the Office of Human Resources: the Office of Personnel, the Office of Learning, the Office of Civil Rights and Equal Opportunity, and the Office of Labor Management and Employee Relations. We also have a diversity and inclusion staff that coordinate a diversity and inclusion council, which is something that President Obama required all agencies to do. We also have what we're standing up very soon, a more robust human capital planning office, so that we can do a little bit more far-reaching planning for our workforce and our workforce planning. As Chief Human Capital Officer, I sit on a council of Chief Human Capital Officers. I happen to be sort of the lone remaining member of that original group of Chief Human Capital Officers that came into effect in 2003. And in that role, basically, I get to contribute to human resource improvements and innovations government-wide, special initiatives, core initiatives like hiring, improving the hiring process in government, those kinds of things. So one is a focus on Social Security, and the other one is a more government-wide focus.
Now, I did want to ask you a little bit about the CHECO Council and being one of those original members, because the Chief Human Capital Officers Act 2002 is part of the Homeland Security Act of 2002.
Yes, correct.
You became the CHECO in 2003.
Correct.
What was it like to actually be thrown into a completely brand new position that the government hadn't really seen before?
It was exciting from my perspective, and I think that was true for all of my peers. We were being recognized in a way that other C-suite executives had been, your chief financial officers, your chief information officers. It was an exciting time in terms of recognizing that human resources government-wide really needed to be professionalized in a way that it may not have been previously, that it was a specialty, and that there were a lot of rules and regulations and laws that agencies had to be focused on and attend to in order for government to run more efficiently and effectively. So it was an enhanced emphasis on human resources, on human capital, and the importance of it. And I think we all took that very seriously. It's interesting that after 11 years, most of my peers have moved on either to well-deserved retirement or other positions. And as I've said to a few people, when you get to be the last of the Mohicans, you start to look over your shoulder a little bit. But it's really been a great experience.
The SSA, I think, if anything, CHECO might be a little bit more important than a lot of other agencies because it's so large and diverse. Talk a little bit about some of the priorities that you had coming in 11 years ago to the CHECO position.
Well, we at the time that I came in as the Deputy Commissioner for Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer, we had about 60,000 employees. During that decade, that next decade, we actually increased our workforce up to about 68,000 employees, really in response to the growing workload. More Americans were retiring. That continues as the baby boomers retire in the private sector. And as a result of that, people were presenting for their retirement benefits. At the same time, we've had some economic troughs in this country, and there's always a tendency for people to present with disabilities and an incapability to work because of those economic downturns, because a lot of the jobs that they might do even with a disability either dry up or get eliminated, and as a result they get thrown into a situation where they can't work because of the jobs that are left. You know, they're just incapable of doing them. So they present to us for disability services, and they go through a process. And so you have unprecedented numbers of people coming to us for their retirement benefits, and also an unprecedented number of people presenting to us for disability benefits. It creates kind of the perfect storm for us, because as those workload demands are going up, our workforce is actually coming down. So after 11 years, we're back to about 60,000 employees. We were able to have a little bit of a spike to deal with that growing workload, but as a result of the budget difficulties, we've had to bring down our workforce to live within the budget that is appropriated. And as a result of that, we're stressed like a lot of other federal agencies are stressed.
I understand that a lot of agencies are stressed, but you guys actually do a really good job in certain areas that I know some agencies struggle with. And I've got some testimony that you gave to the House Oversight Committee. So pretend for a second I'm Daryl Issa, but I won't yell at you or scream at you or anything
Thank
like
you.
That.
I appreciate it.
Some of the numbers I saw that jumped out at me, as of September 30th, 2006, approximately 30% of the SES Corps was minority compared to 16% government-wide. You have a very high number. I think it was 70% female workforce.
That's right.
That's pretty astronomical compared to a lot of different agencies. How do you bring that to the SSA? What are the strategies behind getting those kinds of numbers?
I would say, well, diversity, first of all, diversity and inclusion, I think, is very, very important and has been to the agency for decades. I think early on, Social Security is 78 years old. And during that time, the people who came there in a leadership capacity and the people who came there to do the work, I think, had a shared commitment that they were going to do the best possible job to reach the populations that either needed to present for benefits or needed some sort of service from the agency. There was an emphasis for decades to make sure that as America became more diverse, the workforce of Social Security matched that diversity and could speak all the languages. I believe the number of languages and dialects that our employees proper speak is close to 100.
Wow.
So we really have a tremendous capacity to relate to communities and to people in this country culturally and linguistically. And that gives us sort of a unique place in government. But I think it's just a commitment to serve people. And I think a lot of the gender dynamics are really a function of where we're housed right now. We're based in Baltimore. Our headquarters are there. And as I've heard the story, historically, males in the Baltimore area, because of the wage opportunities, flock to the factories, the steel mills, what have you, and the work at Social Security was largely viewed as clerical, so you had a lot of women presenting there. Over the years, obviously, that's changed dramatically. You know, industry is not what it was in the Baltimore area, and the jobs have been professionalized, and we have a lot of disciplines now that you have to have if you're going to operate in government, you know, systems, financial management, as we've been talking about at a pretty large agency with a pretty significant footprint. Unlike a lot of federal agencies, we serve the public very directly. And so we are in a lot of locations. Now we're moving more of that work to the internet, and that's been a fortunate thing given the fact that we have been unable to maintain the numbers of employees that we once did. I think the Social Security Administration at one time was perhaps up in the area of 87,000 employees. So with automation and some other innovations, we've been able to operate with much fewer employees than that. But it's still a huge workload. So we continue to struggle with having the right balance for the amount of work coming at us. But I think we're at the moment probably somewhere around 69% female. So we've had a little more success in attracting males in recent years. But it is largely a female workforce, and it's a good counterbalance to some of the other parts of government, like the Defense Department, which is sort of male-centric, where we tend to be female-centric. And I think a lot of it has to do with the nature of the work.
That's really interesting. I'm sure also that the SSA office is one of the very few agencies in the government that is probably riddled with purple and black all over the walls and big raven heads everywhere.
Yeah, and headquarters, that's true. But we have some interesting rivalries because, you know, there are a lot of people who hail from the Pittsburgh area, so you get those Raven-Pittsburgh tensions, and I happen to be from Philadelphia originally, so I'm an Eagles fan, a long-suffering Eagles fan. But, yeah, we have a lot of fun with sports in the agency.
That's great, the great office culture and everything.
It is.
Well, that's important because
it is.
All over the country, not only is the workforce shrinking, but hours to actually go into the office are going down. So when you have sort of that perfect storm of challenges, Can you identify, you know, the top priorities? Is that how you go down the list of here's what we need to tackle first, here's how we do it? You are one of the last Mohicans here for the Chief Human Capital Officer. So what kind of advice would you give to people that are in this kind of situation?
Well, of that original group, but we have a very talented group of Chief Human Capital Officers generally, even in those who have been second and third generation. I think most of us really do approach it by paying attention to what the workforce needs, both our assessment of it and what the workers tell us they need. And what we've heard at Social Security, and I think this is echoed across government, is that there's a tremendous need for communication. People need to know what we expect them to do, and they need to know how we're going about doing it. And so my commissioner, Acting Commissioner Carolyn Colvin, has put a lot of emphasis on communicating with the workforce in the right way. Leadership is huge, and I think the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey clearly shows that as go the leadership in many organizations, so go, you know, the workforce and the work. And we have put a lot of emphasis on leadership training at Social Security. Historically, we've reemphasized it in the last few years because it's important, particularly in a tough environment like we're in right now, to have leaders that lead well. And the other area which I think every employee, whether you're public or private, can relate to is development. You know, to what extent are we training people and developing people to be the best workers they can possibly be? And our employees tell us, you know, they're really starved for more and more training. They want more diversity in the work that they do. They want us to call upon them, but they want us to make sure they're equipped and able to do the work.
Okay, Dr. Wells, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about how you're communicating with both your staff and the agency at large. I want to talk a little bit about marketability and then how you are able to drive home the mission of your agency in order to keep morale up during these tough times. But again, I'm speaking with Dr. Reginald Wells. He's the Deputy Commissioner of the SSA's Office of Human Resources. He's also the Chief Human Capital Officer for the Social Security Administration. He's my guest for Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and we'll be back in just a moment.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley. For the month of November, we're focusing on the Social Security Administration, and today I have Dr. Reginald Wells in the studio with me. He's the Deputy Commissioner of the Social Security Administration's Office of Human Resources. He's also the Chief Human Capital Officer for the SSA. And Dr. Wells,
I would think that it's important for the SSA to really drive home the message of what the mission is, because I spoke with Peter Spencer. He's the Deputy Commissioner for Budget for you guys, and he said that it's really hard because when you go to Congress and you bring numbers saying, you know, these are the improper payments, this kind of stuff, you know, it's a large number, but when you look at the scope of how much the SSA actually does, the success rate is actually somewhere around 99.9%.
That's correct.
Is that marketable for the employees and that you can bring inside the agency, like, listen, this is what we're doing, this is really important, and I know you're getting a lot of crap from the outside world, but let's stay focused. This is our core mission, and we're doing it.
Well, we're fortunate in that regard, Sean, because I believe that, you know, with a tradition of 78 years and the kind of mission that we have, I think there is a tremendous ability for leaders to inspire the workers to do their best work, and at times to go beyond what they might be expected to achieve things that maybe no one expected them to be able to achieve with the resources they had to achieve it. Social Security, I think, and I don't have a good enough perspective on all federal budgets and what, you know, the overhead is for them, but I've heard and read in a number of places that we're one of the more efficient agencies, given what we're given to work with and given how well we do it and how efficiently we do it, you know, with that that appropriation and level of support. I think that allows us to really encourage workers to do their best possible work. So they're used to having pretty unreasonable workloads. They're well-trained, and as I pointed out to people, you know, federal government is not a monolith. So each one of us has a very special mission, usually. There may be some overlap here and there, but for the most part, we do very specialized things. And the only organization in our culture that does what we do is us, in terms of supplemental security, income support, and retirement benefits. And so it's a very technical body of work. Our people are trained very well to do it. They do it as efficiently as possible. And I think that's the only thing that's really allowed us to keep pace to the degree that we can with the workload. Now, we have massive backlogs in our disability program, but I know our leaders in that part of the organization and the employees and judges who and attorneys who do that work are working feverishly to try to work down those backlogs because that's what they're committed to.
Well, with these kinds of challenges in place and training being something that the employees crave, why don't we just take a couple minutes and explain sort of what is a leader at SSA? What do you need to be able to bring to the table and have ready to go on day one?
Well, one of the things that historically, I think, and this is probably true in the world of work generally, that historically people came up through the ranks because of their technical ability. And then in order to get that next promotion, you entered into supervision. And then eventually to get that next promotion after that, you entered into leadership at a higher level in the organization. And sometimes those people were not trained properly to take on the mantle of leadership. I think one of the things that came with the advent of the Chief Human Capital Officer Council is a heavy emphasis on the importance of leadership, and certainly the senior executive service, when it was created with the same spirit that in order to manage the business of government well, you have to have a specialty of executive leadership or management that will make sure that the mission is accomplished, that resources are used efficiently and effectively, and that people are led well. And I think at Social Security, we have emphasized that in recent years. Even before I got there, there was a real commitment to leadership training. And we've been looking at the demographics for a long time. SSA has a distinguished actuarial operation, and we have both the short and the long view. And so looking at the retirement wave that was coming and those kinds of realities, we started putting into place career development at various levels of the organization that was very focused on leadership and leadership at the next level, so that people would have, for lack of a better way of putting it, sort of a career ladder to higher levels of leadership responsibility. So Social Security has a real proud tradition of having people who came into the organization. In fact, Pete Spencer is one of our distinguished executives who came into the organization a number of years ago as a claims rep, and elevated because of his excellence through the various levels of the organization to now be our chief financial officer. He's been a regional commissioner in the San Francisco region. He's held various leadership jobs and headquarters in the field. And that's what we stand for. We really do have a very well-trained cadre of executives who know the business that we do very, very well, and also have been trained to lead well.
If my memory serves me correctly, he left for a little bit, but came back because he couldn't stay away.
Pete retired and was called out of retirement by our acting commissioner, Carolyn Colvin, because she knew how good he was, and he couldn't stay away.
Did you have to do the secret handshake when he got back?
He did. he never forgot that.
Dr. Wells, we have to take another quick break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the future workforce. If you have any priorities or concerns that you're looking for going on into fiscal 2015, 2016, 2017. So, again, I'm Sean McCall. You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For the month of November, we're looking at the Social Security Administration. My guest in the studio today is Dr. Reginald Wells. He's the Deputy Commissioner of the SSA's Office of Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer for the SSA. We'll be right back.
Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government. And the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and responsive dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month, featuring the Social Security Administration on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and today in the studio is Dr. Reginald Wells. He's the Deputy Commissioner of the Social Security Administration's Office of Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer for the SSA. I'd like to ask you a little bit about the future workforce at the SSA, because as we know, resources are pretty much dried up, and we're looking forward to more continuing resolutions, maybe a budget agreement, who knows. But how do you make sure you're planning your workforce and doing those steps that you need to do to keep fresh people in the seats and make sure people are going up the career ladder at the pace that they want?
Yeah, I think, Sean, most federal agencies are very focused on their succession management. And so, like those other agencies, we've been attempting to focus on succession management for a number of years, certainly during my tenure there. The real challenge, however, is resources. And we are attempting with the available resources we have to make sure that we're developing people at all levels of the organization. Some of those people are very committed to the frontline work and, you know, doing claims work and other work that we do at the, you know, sort of the entry point of our organization. But there are others who aspire to leadership, and so we want to make sure there are pathways to leadership opportunities. We also are a diversified organization in the sense that we have many different lines of business. So within each one of those lines of business, you're looking at what's your talent base, who is in a position to move up in that part of the organization. So we really, it's a pretty intricate, you know, sort of network of trying to figure out, you know, who's going to remain with the agency, who wants to progress in the agency, who has what skill gaps that need to be filled within the agency. And so we spend a lot of our time doing that. My big concern right now, quite frankly, is, you know, as you look at succession management, it depends on, if you're lucky, a flow of people into the organization and out of the organization. You know, people come to work for X number of years. They look toward well-deserved retirement at the end of that process. If there are people coming in behind them, then there's this very natural passing of the baton, one public servant to the other, and it works very well. When there are gaps in that pipeline, then you start to run into problems. So if we have periods of time where we're not hiring, for example, those are years lost in terms of replenishing that workforce. Down the road, you start to see the problem of those gaps, because we won't have the same numbers of people who are ready and capable to take on higher levels of responsibility. And that's the real problem we're faced with right now.
So I'm assuming the hiring freeze in the past few years has been pretty damaging to that plan.
Pretty brutal, yes. Yes. As I said, when I came into the organization, we were about at 60,000. We took a little bit of a dip to about 59 in my first or second year. We then got more support for adding employees because of the workload demands that were coming at the agency. And so we rose to about 67,000, 68,000 people. And over the last few years, because we attrit about 3,000 people a year, 3,500, we've come back down to about 60,000 employees. But our workloads haven't come down.
Right.
That's the thing I want to emphasize.
If anything, it's gone up.
It's gone up, absolutely.
Thanks to baby boomers such as yourself.
And such as myself. And that's why I'm going to work a little while longer.
Public servant all the way.
There you go.
So those are some pretty impressive numbers, but let's put some faces on these numbers. What does that mean for the people working in the quote-unquote trenches of the SSA, where I would assume it has some sort of impact on job satisfaction, because it's almost, I would assume you kind of get locked into certain levels because, you know, I'm sorry, there's no one that can do what you do. You're
right.
Critical to this agency, and we
Correct.
Need somebody to do this.
Well, as I said, our folks are very highly trained to do what they do. While we have added over the years, particularly the last decade, a lot of technological support to what they do, and we're moving more aggressively into areas like telework, nonetheless, it's still a pretty labor-intensive responsibility. And so it's getting tough and tougher. We have people who are very engaged in this work, and they're very committed to it, both personally and professionally. So what I've seen in my time there is that even when the levels of support across the board are not what employees expect of government, they continue in spite of it. I mean, I liken it to the school teacher. You know, you hear the stories about the school teacher who works in an impoverished school district, and she will bring in her own supplies to make sure that the kids get the kind of education that she feels they deserve. I think our workers have the same kind of mentality because they come out of those communities that they work in because of that match between our workforce and the people they serve, that sort of parity. They get it. They understand that these people presenting with need have genuine need. And so they will go to great lengths to make sure that they deliver good service to those people. And I can't tell you how often I get compliments about the fine work that our folks do. Because we really do touch families and people at some of the most vulnerable times in their lives. The death of a loved one, a retirement, which can be a very traumatic thing, making that final decision to step outside of the workforce, and or presenting with a disability, or getting older and developing a disability. I mean, people present to us sometimes at the most vulnerable points in their life, and our people meet them and serve them with great compassion, and that's what I hear all the time. I think, you know, there's a growing frustration with our workforce that they can't do the job they ideally would like to do because the resources are preventing it, and the support they're accustomed to having coming behind those who retire is not coming because we've been caught, unfortunately, the last few years in hiring freezes. And, of course, the negative rhetoric never helps. And when people are working hard to deliver a service to the American public and people are talking in disparaging ways about public servants, even if it's not personally directed at them, you know, we all feel for one another. You know, if you're a public servant, you understand what that's about. And it really is a very fine tradition that a lot of us believe in personally.
Well, Dr. Wells, we are out of time right now, but I would like to thank you again for taking the time to come into the studio and talk to me today.
Thank you, Sean, for taking the time to talk to me.
Dr. Reginald Wells is the Deputy Commissioner of the Social Security Administration's Office of Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer for the SSA. You can find our entire conversation archived on federalnewsradio.com. Just use the search term, Agency of the Month. I'm Sean McCauley, and thank you again for listening to Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 11:30 a.m., only on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m., your source for federal news now.